Hey, mind your body. Welcome back to another episode. I am so thrilled to present to you this amazing conversation I had today with Dr. Melanie Johnson French. Our conversation went to places I didn't expect. Some interesting confessions and of my own, and also fascinating client examples of her work through dance movement therapy through the lens of the Kestenberg movement profile, which she will explain to you all about and how it helps us, and it helps practitioners work with clients in a way that is really much more effective and deeper and quicker than many other forms of therapy. So let's get into it. Enjoy. This is Mind Your Body, a dance movement therapy perspective on the integration of our emotional, cognitive, physical, and spiritual aspects of our being into one more aware and whole existence. All right, here we are back with Mind Your Body. And today we have Dr. Melanie Johnson French, who is a board certified dance movement therapist, certified KMP analyst, and master trainer and counselor in the Boston metro area. Melanie specializes in teaching how to recognize psychological phenomena in body movement, facial expression, tone of voice, and interpersonal styles of individuals, groups, and communities. Oh, I'm so excited to jump in and dive into this today. Welcome, Melanie.
Thank you so much, Orit. So glad to be here.
Yeah, me too. And we were just talking before we hit the record button about how a lot of the KMP information out there is kind of dry and maybe hard to get through. So could we start with giving an overview of KMP? What does that even stand for? And what is it? Why is it important for us to know?
Absolutely. So KMP stands for Kestenberg Movement Profile, named after Dr. Judith Kestenberg, its originator. And the KMP is a system of movement description. So in short, it looks at how we do everyday body movements, from how we eat our food to how we interact with others, and looks at those as important, but also it's a way of looking at them and actually writing them down. So we're attuning to a person, which means we're not only trying to feel their body, we're actually trying to feel their movements resonate in our own body. We write down what we feel. So we're almost like a human seismograph, like an instrument that would measure, you know, the Earth's subtle changes. This is kind of a unique way of attuning to a person, writing down what we see. And then what got written down, Kestenberg observed, was predictable in children from ages 0 to 6. So she noticed that when she attuned to them, there were different movements at different ages, but in subsequent ages, there were very similar qualities. So that's what sparked her to go deeper into what children are saying with their bodies, and then throughout the lifespan, what all humans are saying with their bodies. So it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, so it's basically an assessment tool, or I guess an observation tool or structure in observing movement behavior and qualities of movement behavior?
That's right. So it is an assessment tool. And if people read the textbook or research articles, they'll probably notice that the original languaging comes from Anna Freud's metapsychological model. So you'll see a lot of Freudian language, which turns off a lot of people. It's like, oh, I'm not a Freudian, or that's, you know, irrelevant. So this probably isn't for me. And unfortunately, that's not the case completely. It's that if we think of the context that it was born in, you know, between the 40s and 60s, psychodynamic theory was, you know, a primary Western perspective, and that's what Kestenberg used. However, Dr. Kestenberg was really open-minded. In fact, at her center, she had art therapists, dance therapists, music therapists, and the KMP theory is actually an integration of many worldviews. It's child development, it's psychodynamic theory, there's relational theory. So it's actually a lot of integration of many worldviews rather than just one, which I think is one of the main misconceptions people have, is that you've got to be a Freudian to use it. And that couldn't be further from reality.
Yeah, that's important to share.
Yeah.
So for those who are really new or have never heard of this before, can you give a certain example of how this kind of rhythm presents in a certain person, how you can see it and feel it and use it to understand nonverbal behavior?
Absolutely. So because this is a developmental psychological theory, if we start in early childhood, if you think about, if you've ever seen a one-year-old or infant, and if they're nursing, like if they don't have their teeth yet, if they're nursing either from a breast or from a bottle, you'll see they'll do something called the sucking rhythm. So you could even recreate that in the audience now. If you were to suck on a straw, you could sort of, and we see that children do that particular movement. And they also show that movement out in other body parts. So they might caress the parent or whoever's nursing them in these very smooth strokes with their fingers. And interestingly enough, in adults, we might see the same movement. Like if I'm smoothly nodding my head back and forth to take in what you're saying to me. So that rhythm that originated when a child was taking in milk shows up later in life when we're also, quote unquote, taking in not just food, but maybe I'm taking in information.
Yeah.
Or for example, if I give someone a hug and I wrap my arms around them and my fingers make this smooth circular movement. And if your audience members and you want to try that right now, if you were to hug yourself and kind of make a smooth circular movement with your fingers, you could also greet someone by hugging them and tapping them. So we could try that. Mm-hmm. And just sense in your body if that kinesthetic feedback feels different to you.
Absolutely.
Okay. So both of them are rhythmic movements. And in dance therapy, you know, rhythmic movement has come to be one of the hallmarks of healing. And that's true even in polyvagal theory, that, you know, rhythmic movement has been shown to develop myelination of the vagus nerve. And something that I was interested in my doctoral research, because I studied the rhythms, is rhythm too broad of a word? Because since you felt that difference of a smooth touch versus a sharp touch, you know, that seems to matter. Like the body registers those very differently. So in the KMP theory, we can actually describe different qualities of rhythms and what they might be expressing psychologically. So if we go back to that infant, so that rhythm, which is called the sucking rhythm, the smooth one, that's about taking in very readily and smoothly. But then when we developed teeth, a new rhythm emerged and we need to crunch food. And interestingly enough, a child's body movement changes too, and they start tapping maybe the high chair, or they might want to hit, and it's like, oh no, they suddenly became aggressive. And what the KMP theory does is it actually normalizes these changes, and it helps us predict what might happen, not necessarily in like a linear way, but we won't be surprised when a kid has a new behavior. But it can also help parents, because sometimes parents will say, oh my gosh, am I doing something wrong? Or is there something wrong with my child? And a lot of times the KMP helps us see that there's less pathology in humans than we might think there is. So it can really help parents to expect what might be coming next and how to support a kid at that age and how to also not take it personally if a behavior changes, but to recognize it as, oh, this is just a new temporary change, but it's reflecting a lot of deep processes that are developing in the child that it'll be necessary for them to have later in life.
Yeah, so seeing these behavior changes is actually an indication of development, not pathology, like some parents might, or even I would imagine teachers or people not as well versed in this area.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. So that's the other thing that it helps with is so parents can recognize what's happening, but if you're in an education setting and say, you know, the child or person might have some issues with learning. I was thinking of that one phrase where, you know, if a plant isn't growing, you don't necessarily blame the plant, but you look at the ground that it's growing in. And so if we use the KMP, we can see what kind of body movements the person is expressing. And it actually gives us a map for what's happening with them, but it can also give us a map of the environment and to notice, oh, maybe there are some clashes in the environment that aren't supportive to this person's needs. So it's, you know, it's kind of like I like to think of the KMP as a map. You know, it's like if we were to be lost in the woods, we could use our intuition to try to kind of work our way through it. But if we had a map to actually say, oh, you know, if I go this way, the path might be a little rougher, but it could get me over the mountain. Or if I go this way, I might run into this or that. The KMP kind of serves as that. It's like it helps give validation to some of our intuitive impulses, but then it also shows us, you know, where we might want to go or to help a client develop if they're coming to us with a concern or a parent is coming with a concern.
Yeah. Can you expand on that further? And I'm also, you know, I'm interested in how this might present in adults as well. Like, okay, so that will be my first question. Because what does that mean? I guess, what does that mean if an adult is doing a certain rhythmic behavior versus not doing a different one? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So let me give an example of an adult client I had once who self-described verbally, so someone who was able to self-describe, saying, she identified as a woman and said, you know, it's really hard for me to commit to one thing. And, you know, I just feel like I'm moving all the time. And so first I can use what she's telling me to map what rhythm that might be or what movement pattern within the KMP that might be. So we don't even have to look at movement. Sometimes the way people use their words or the metaphors they use, we can also say, what KMP movement would that be? So I can kind of locate where in the movement map I am to situate myself. And so in my mind, I was hearing what's called the twisting rhythm, which we see when kids learn to crawl. And at that phase, kids tend to, this is about, you know, one and a half, and they might, you know, explore a little piece of lint or twist it in their hand or enjoy getting messy and playing with, you know, fluid things. And in adults, we can see this pattern when someone might be non-committal or sort of have similar qualities of maybe they have a messy room or they might be, you know, feeling all over the place, all of these possible ways people can experience what we know as the twisting rhythm. And it can show up in their body movements. So they might twirl their hair or play with their ear, or their eyes might look around the room. You can look at eye movement, or their fingers might, you know, roll their fabric on their shirt. And it turned out the client had those movement patterns. So what we would do is we would say, okay, I'm seeing the twisting rhythm and I'm hearing the client say that it's become at a problematic level. So I don't automatically assume, oh, she, you know, this is something I have to fix. She's come to me and said, this is an issue. So I would say, okay, the balance, the way to balance that out is to integrate the companion rhythm, which is called the strain release rhythm. And the strain release rhythm is about structure. If you think of squeezing your hands tightly, holding, and then release it, like you're throwing a ball. That's the kind of the balancer, you could say, to twisting. So I created some movement interventions that were like the strain release for her to help her play with not only avoidant patterns, but what it feels like to hold on or to commit. Mm-hmm. So she did like the high plank push-up position in yoga, which requires, you know, quite a bit of strength in the body. Or she squeezed and held on to a really heavy set of books. And after a while, she noticed that those were uncomfortable movements for her. She didn't like to hold on. So we played with twisting and strain release until eventually she realized, oh my gosh, I know why I don't like this. So she gained some insight. And through that insight, then she was a little more willing to befriend that strain release rhythm. And noticed that she had trouble with boundaries before, but the more she integrated strain release, she was able to say, okay, this is not okay. So you can even hear it in my voice, like, this is not okay. There's that strain versus, oh yeah, we can do what you want in the twisting. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a long description, but I hope it was kind of a clear way to see how this could show up in an adult.
Yeah, no, that was really clear. The insight that she gained, was it like by doing this movement she was avoiding for, you know, a while by just not being in a repertoire? Was it related to a traumatic memory or was it that specific? Or
so it actually got very specific. She realized, and I want to say this is over a few sessions too, but she realized that in her family dynamic, there was a lot of triangulation, which we identified later. So we used that term. But so her parents fought a lot. And so she developed this twisting rhythm as a way to try to appease both, as a way to try to take on that role of rescuer of the dynamic, to try to diffuse. And she would find herself doing that in social situations and compromising her own sense of self in service of pleasing others. So yeah. She connected it. Yeah, I mean, it gives me chills to think about because, you know, you never know what movement is going to evoke, but this just reflects the power of changing your body movement to change your psychology to, you know, it might connect to a memory, to something you didn't even know was there. So it really fascinates me.
Yeah, that was, I'm fascinated by like all the ways that you had seen this through this movement map that you're describing that is KMP. Does that allow you to kind of intervene faster than, say, you know, of course, a different therapy, but even different approaches in dance therapy?
I've noticed in my work that it certainly helps me get clear very quickly. I remember when I first learned, when I took some dance therapy workshops, when I was just thinking about entering the field, I felt like I was a very intuitive person. So I resonated with just, I can just kind of sense what's needed. Mm-hmm. And what I came to realize is that when I took the KMP, when I had a language that could just precisely describe what I was intuiting, the language was like less value laden. So it kind of helped me to almost remove my own bias too, and just sort of describe, okay, here's what I was seeing. Oh, here's why I was intuitively sensing this is what was needed. Oh, and oh, there it is in the map. And oh, this person, you know, had these behaviors and this is what the map predicted they would have. So it kind of gives some support for just those who work intuitively.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think your example of your client described this really beautifully, but I kind of just want to ask you here too. When we were talking earlier, I was saying that in my membership, there's a woman who just last night asked, can you explain how we can change unhealthy patterns through movement? So what would be your answer to that from a KMP perspective?
Right. So I would say the KMP is first and foremost a strength-based theory, and it's also a descriptive versus evaluative. So I just want to emphasize that we're not going in and saying, okay, I'm putting you in this box and here's what you are and here it is. It's not that at all. It's saying, okay, a person has come to me and said something in my life isn't working. And so we can say, okay, where in your body movement are we seeing that? And here it is in the movement map. And so, you know, I think the example of my client could be one thread. There's another example where, let's say a parent comes to you and says, my child has this sudden spike in aggression and I don't know what to do about it. So they're deeming it quote unquote unhealthy. So that's the first thing I would say is the KMP doesn't tell you what's healthy and unhealthy. It tells you that if you are noticing something unhealthy, or if you've even received a diagnosis, you'd be able to find in the body movement where that could connect to. And then it gives you the movements that you'd work on to heal that. So in the example of the parent, if they're suddenly like, oh my God, my kid is suddenly aggressive, this is like not good. If they're trying to suppress the aggression, which is probably the instinct, it's like scary. And what we'd actually want to do is work with the kid and find creative ways to channel the aggression, because it's an internal need we actually all have. Some people might not want to go there, or it might feel scary, depending on our history and our experience with aggression. But there are times in life when we need strong, assertive movements. Like if I say, hey, I'm going to go volunteer and build this house for Habitat for Humanity. And they need me to push up these, you know, 2x4s and I got to whack a hammer. I have to muster that from somewhere. And so, but if I was taught, oh, I've got to be quiet, I've got to be gentle, is it okay to do this? My body is going to have a response if the situation is asking me to do something that my culture or family said, oh, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. So we would work with the child to try to channel the aggression in a healthy way. The KMP also uses a lot of singing. So we might say, you can't hit your mom, but you can hit this pillow. So we try and normalize and turn a scary activity into something playful. And of course, there's lots of exceptions and questions beyond that, but I hope that's kind of a general overview of how we might look at something that seems like it's unhealthy or unwanted.
Yeah, I think that's a great first question is like, is this even unhealthy? Which oftentimes working with children, you know, like your adult client, the child doesn't come and tell you like, hey, this is a problem in my life and I really want to change it. It's like usually the parent comes and says, this is a problem and I think we should change it.
Right. And so this is where implicit bias comes in, because a parent has their own history and their own narrative, whether they're aware of it or not, conscious of it or not. And oftentimes we do what was done to us, or we parent in ways that we might even try to avoid what happened to us. And all of those can be factors in parenting style. So yes, it's like, if something is happening with the child that seems unhealthy, probably what's happening is a need is not being met, or it's not being able to be expressed creatively or channeled in the way. And so they're going to show us in their behaviors.
Right. I imagine for a parent or, you know, an adult who has unresolved trauma or not feeling safe around being, having more of that assertive, forceful, I don't know if that's the right word, but assertive rhythm or movement, that they're not comfortable setting boundaries, just like your example from before, like, oh no, don't do that, right? Versus like, no, we don't do that, that's not safe, whatever it is, that's gonna come, that's gonna be expressed through the child in a certain way of not getting the boundaries that they need and like any child would need.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we think about the way the human nervous system is architected, it's like, if something doesn't feel right, we're not going to do it. The brain is designed to keep us safe. And so as adults, you know, if it's not okay for my body to be assertive, if I'm trauma informed in my work, I'm not going to ask a client to immediately go to that, say, strain release rhythm. It's always, I meet you where you're at, but not only do I meet you where you're at, I can actually see where in the map I'm meeting you.
Can we talk about that for a second? That not going directly to this certain rhythm, right? The strain release, because there's a lot of misinformation out there about releasing trauma or releasing an emotion and go for a really hard 10-mile run or, you know, scream, just primal scream. This was a question recently in my group and people had great intentions, but I was like, no, this is not safe advice. So
100%. Yeah. Yes. Unfortunately, there's a lot of untrained advice out there. So, so yes, it's important to understand that we're working with humans. And even though we have all these intersecting factors that make up our identity, our culture, our age, our ability, our histories, how, you know, our families treated us, how am I a highly sensitive person? You know, how is my nervous system architected? All of those things we have to consider. And so the KMP teaches us how to become more fluent in our own preferences. So for example, if I prefer, say, those more indulging, smooth type of rhythms, like that sucking rhythm, the smooth circles, or if I like a swaying rhythm where I like to move my body smoothly side to side, those rhythms might be drastically different and uncomfortable for another person. But if you know where your comfort zone is, then you've identified the movement that your nervous system is like, okay, we like this and we know where to return to. So that if I'm stretching a little bit and maybe I do what's called a mixed rhythm, I don't do the complete opposite rhythm, but I do like a little flavor of it. And I might mix a little, say, strain or another stronger rhythm into my smooth one. It's like titrating into the nervous system. Like, okay, we can gently and gradually introduce the different way. So we're still staying calm. We're still doing that regulation, you know, we're like letting the cerebellum and the brainstem know like, yep, we're safe. And we're going to introduce something new. You can do what's called a mixed rhythm. So we're not just like doing that sort of Western American, like I'm going to power through this because that's not how our nervous systems, we're not always designed to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out. I mean, it's something I call safety movement for my clients, like finding your safety movements and that always being home base that you can come back to. And I love how you talked about titrating and gently introducing new qualities. So it's not a shock to the nervous system, which would be defeating. It would be the opposite of what we're trying to create, which is change, create more shock or freeze or shutting down.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is another reason why I like the KMP so much, is it doesn't set an unrealistic expectation that, okay, the value is to be more fighting rhythms. It's like, that might be a cultural value, but that might be something manufactured that has no consideration of how human nervous systems and social engagement systems function. So it's like, it helps honor like, oh, it's okay that this is what feels like home for me. And I know why that is. And even if it's a quote unquote clash, so clash is a word the KMP uses. If it's a clash with, say, my cultural movement or what's around me, I at least know not to take it personally. I can describe and say, oh, the culture just happens to value fighting rhythms, and I happen to need indulging rhythms. So, yep, mm-hmm. I might feel that clash, but I don't have to make it about me. And I don't even have to blame someone else. I can just say, oh, that's what that is.
Okay. Yeah, it reminds me of, well, it reminds me of a few different things in my life and life in general, but my husband and I go to a lot of, well, we used to before we had our baby, music festivals. And sometimes I like to just sit and like receive the music and just enjoy it. And people will be like, why aren't you up and dancing? Why aren't you having fun? Like as if there's something wrong with how I'm moving, or minimally moving to the music. And so there are these cultural expectations and shoulds of how, of good, quote unquote, good or healthy or whatever it is, ways of moving.
Absolutely, completely. So when you're in that moment, it's like, you know, you could just say, oh yeah, I'm just being intergenital, but you can be outer genital and that's totally cool.
You're like, what are you talking about? Like,
wait, what?
I just scare them away.
That's right.
Yeah. And I've had clients I've worked with who, and I resonate with this too, just are feel more settled in life, just moving more slowly and indulgently. And that's such a, that goes against this like go, you know, move kind of culture. Even within, you know, someone's own family, like my husband has a lot of more energy and moves faster and, you know, gets things done. And I'm like, I'm going to do this thing and that thing and I'll get that done. And he's like, why can't you just finish one thing and then move to the next? And I'm like, that's not how I function.
Yeah, right. So if I were to describe that, one way that I could do that, hopefully with being less judgmental in my own personal bias, is I could say, okay, so from a KMP lens, I wonder if your husband has a comfort in the starting stopping rhythm, and you might have a comfort in the running drifting rhythm, which represent just our personal relationship to time. And some people feel more comfortable fighting time. Some people feel more comfortable indulging in time. Mm-hmm. And so parents and children or couples, these are fascinating areas to look at. Okay, are we clashing here? And how do we work with that? It doesn't have to be a death sentence. It can just be a simple way of understanding, oh, okay. Got it. That's how you relate and how I relate. So I don't know if any of that makes sense, but it was just kind of an example to show how we could use the KMP to try and understand your situation and take my own bias out as much as possible and see if I could just sort of map it.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I'm sure for whoever digs into that, like if Aaron and I were to dig in more into that together in some kind of couples therapy setting, if that's something we decided to ever do, based on the conversation that we're having here right now and what I know from my own work is there would be some kind of uncomfortable memory or trauma or whatever around my unpreferred time and his unpreferred time. And I think this comes back to like how we get triggered in relationships and how something kind of as basic as our relationship to time or how fast or slow we move can create so much distress in relationships, parents, children, you know, partner to partner, et cetera.
Yes, absolutely. Right. So if there were a couple that noticed that they had a clash and then, like you say, you uncovered like, oh my gosh, when I was, you know, a kid, this was a major source of stress. Like, oh, now I know why this is a preference for me, or, oh, now I get why this is a trigger. And it, you know, there's lots of ways to identify sources of triggers and how to heal from trauma. So this is just kind of one way. It's not the only way, obviously, but just kind of a way of having compassion for ourselves. It's so easy for humans to take things personally, or to even sometimes people, you know, don't like that we have a history, and it's sometimes easier to deny that history does matter and it does live in our cells and our tissue and our nervous system. And this is kind of a way of saying, yeah, that happened, and it doesn't have to be a prognosis. We can work with that.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have to be you pathologized either, right? There's something wrong with you if you're not, you know, I just had Jeanette Jakes on my podcast and she was talking about parenting toddlers. And there's always the issue of put on your shoes faster. Come on, come on, come on. Let's get out of the house.
And right. Yes. And especially if a child is in that kind of running, drifting, starting, stopping phase where they want to dawdle and they, you know, take their time. It's like, absolutely, that can happen where you're trying to get out the door and there's that clash. And how you handle that, you know, rightfully so, a parent has got to manage their own frustration, and it's not always easy. But at least if you know, okay, this is part of the phase, let me see how I can work with it, you don't feel like a failure as a parent. You also know that, you know, your child isn't trying to annoy you on purpose. They're just kind of in this temporary part of their development.
Yeah. Would you recommend in that instance that a parent might meet, like, attuned to those rhythms and somehow make it work to still be productive? Like, what would you suggest in that situation?
Right. I mean, there are infinite ways. So there's not just any one way, but this basic idea of meeting someone where they're at, one idea might be to say, oh, I know you really want to take your time, and but you know what, we kind of got to hurry, and here's why. So, you know, or I know you might not like it, I know it might be frustrating, but I'm going to have to, you know, move you along. Another intervention that I was taught by my teachers that is such a good one is if a child doesn't want to do something, but like, let's say you're moving on to the next activity. It's like, okay, we've been at the park, but we need to go. And like, no, 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 I want to stay. And no, you need to put your shoes on. No, no, no. So a way to do that is to say, can you put your shoes on by yourself, or do you need me to help you do it? So it's like they still have a sense of agency that they're making a choice. Mm-hmm. And then you're setting a boundary that they get to feel by saying, yeah, we do need to go, but you have choice with how we do it.
Right.
So that's an idea.
Awesome. Thank you. Is there anything else that you feel is important to share in this interview before we start closing out?
Gosh, so much. But I would say that, you know, just the respect that Kestenberg had for children, that they're not just a blank canvas and they're not just randomly running around getting messy, is something that I think is important for people to know, as well as that the KMP isn't just meant for looking at children. It's meant for people who were maybe once children, sort of tongue in cheek, and how to really recognize that there are more strengths in us as humans than sometimes medical systems have painted there to be. And this system gives us a way to appreciate and just enhance what's working well for someone.
That actually brought up another question for people who are doing quote unquote inner child work or revisiting their inner child, maybe making experiences that they didn't get to have the first time around. Is that something that you do via KMP as well?
Oh, yeah, 100%. You can tell in an adult person's body movements, in fact, what age a trauma might have occurred. Because, you know, like if something happened when I was pre-verbal, I don't have the words to describe it. But let's say something happened when I was one, and I might constantly be chewing my nails, picking off my cuticles till they bleed. I mean, these unconscious, repetitive self-harm type things, it's not always predictive one-to-one, but it's entirely likely that this person had some type of perceived disturbance. It was traumatic for them, or it wasn't resolved for them, and that still shows up in their body. So we might go back to the one-year-old movement patterns and revisit them and do them. Sometimes I've had people literally go to the store and get a bottle and drink water from a bottle so they can re-experience the sucking rhythm.
Wow.
Now, it doesn't have to be at work. It doesn't have to be in public. You don't have to tell me when you're doing it. Don't get me wrong, but—
Only if you want the extra challenge.
But to really allow yourself, like you say, to experience the things that your body knows are still needed.
Amazing. Thank you. So you're offering some upcoming intro workshops to KMP?
I am, yes. So I have some flyers that are on the KMP website. I'm certainly not the only KMP trainer out there, but I do have an upcoming introduction to the tension flow rhythms. We talked a lot about those today. So the flyer is up for that, and that is starting in August. So it's a 4-week series. And then I also have a full 30-hour intro. So it's just the whole movement patterns of the system, the KMP system, that's coming up later in October.
And what's the website exactly?
So KestenbergMovementProfile.org. So it's kind of a mouthful, but all one word. And then there is a tab for courses and workshops. And I also want to say that there's a tab for certified KMP analysts. So if anyone has ever taken a course and been taught the KMP, I would just say make sure that you're taking from someone who's been certified, who really knows and understands the system. And those are all those folks are listed on the website as well. And they offer trainings and privately as well as group classes. So people can find that all there. We also have a KMP Facebook page where we regularly post flyers.
And are these workshops geared towards practitioners specifically?
They're geared toward anyone. So you can take these workshops if you're interested purely in self-development. We have students who have diverse backgrounds from law and medicine to body-oriented therapists and dance therapists who just want more training in movement observation, or if they just want continuing education beyond their graduate degree. So we have students literally from every field, whether they want to focus specifically or just do some more self-work.
Awesome. Thank you. I'll put that link in the podcast notes too. So if it was just too long for anyone, you could just click on it in the show notes.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, Melanie. I really enjoyed this conversation. It's very, very useful. And thank you for sharing your wisdom.
Thank you so much for having me, Ori. Great to be here.